I'm Alan Lytle, 91.3 WUKY News, where it is time for another edition of our award-winning history series, Saving Stories, with Dr. Doug Boyd from the Louis B. Dunn Center for Oral History in the UK Libraries. It's a segment where we feature interviews from the collection.
It's good to be here.
You and I just got finished watching this this incredible documentary series of the Beatles' Get Back, and all I can say is, wow.
I've got a feeling. Feeling deep inside, oh yeah.
It was a rare window into the Beatles behind the scenes. You see their process, writing, crafting, creating a finished song, and then a finished album. What you also see in the background are producers, sound engineers, and technicians who are setting up, breaking down, moving the entire operation from one facility to another. This is really cutting-edge recording technologies for the time. Now, the Nunn Center has an incredible archived oral history collection of 78 interviews conducted by a historian named Susan Schmidt-Horning, who used these interviews for a book she wrote called Chasing Sound. She recorded interviews with engineers, producers, artists who all came out of the 1950s and 60s and technologically shaped the sound of recorded music as we know it. These individuals were innovators and inventors, and what I love about this collection is they're combining history with science, technology, engineering, and art.
And of course, a big part of that all goes back to the Beatles.
Right. In 1967, the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, an album that revolutionized recorded sound for popular music, primarily because of the advent of multi-track recording and overdubbing. So we have an interview with the great producer, Phil Ramone, who really describes the impact of multi-track recording.
Here's your stepping stone. The Beatles make this record with two or three four-track recorders overdubbed, and it, you know, becomes one of the classics. And that is the turning point for everybody. The more padded studios, the rebuilt studios, the Muscle Shoals studio had been making all these Aretha and R&B records, for, you know, and then Memphis was a big place because it had an old movie theater that had been converted. The biggest change ever is the fact that you can control elements.
And that seems to me to be the thing that they were always seeking, this kind of urge to control the sound.
Yeah.
And the Beatles were experimenting wildly, going back as far as Rubber Soul and Revolver.
This really marks a paradigm shift, though, in the use of technology to create this magic in the studio that couldn't be reproduced live. And since the Beatles had sworn off touring in 67, they were now free to experiment widely in the studio.
And we have a direct connection to the Sgt. Pepper sessions.
Right. Susan Schmidt-Horning did an interview with an engineer named Malcolm Addy, who happened to be an engineer at EMI Studios, later referred to as Abbey Road.
When you talk about this EMI studio, it's the Abbey Road Studios, correct?
Well, it was called EMI's Recording Studio.
Right.
The Abbey Road thing only became a name that they used after the album.
Right.
And I find that totally so amusing because the reason why... it is really amusing to me that they're using that as a promotional logo and everything.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the album, they're walking away from Abbey Road Studios,
right,
on the left. And that was the significance of the thing. The fact that we're walking away. They'd finished with that thing with EMI. We're not going back there anymore.
Mm.
Goodbye. Thank God. Now we can do our own thing. We will. We want in our own studio, wherever else we want to go. They were saying goodbye to EMI.
Right.
A whole, I mean, you've got to imagine how much it cost, must cost to buy a building in Savile Row.
Oh, yeah.
And they gutted it. And it never became ungutted.
And the building he's talking about in that clip is where the Beatles relocated to in part two of the documentary. But before that, Malcolm had worked at EMI on overdubs during the Sgt. Pepper sessions.
It was a three-hour. It was at least two three-hour sessions, and George Martin was there, of course, and Paul. John was a leader, but Paul, I think, was probably the one with the level head. You know. Anyway, he came in, and they didn't really know what they were going to do. Just knew they were going to put these trumpets on this thing. You see, so I got the job that day. I guess I don't know why.
And the irony of the Get Back sessions is that they were determined to do everything mostly live.
Correct. After Sgt. Pepper's, they committed to recording this album with very few overdubs.
This is a treasure trove of great interviews, and they're all available online.
These interviews are online in our super cool search system at KentuckyOralHistory.org. You can also check out the great book by Susan Schmidt-Horning called Chasing Sound.
Doug Boyd from the Louis B. Nunn Center for Oral History in the UK Libraries has been our guest again on Saving Stories. Goo 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 joo.
All you need is love.